Hello everybody and welcome back to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist and performance coach for the Renegades from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, counselling, science, and how we can holistically improve our athletes' quality of life. I am also a scientific author for G-Science, helping to provide and share educational content catered towards esports health and performance. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite level gaming. This includes getting an insight from professional players, coaches, shoutcasters, organization owners, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I was very excited to have a chat with Ian Mills, who is an Halo esports influencer and veteran who previously played and coached within the North American scene and is currently an active member of the United States Marine Corps. We discussed the early adoption period of Halo esports and the link to external performance and unnecessary eating habits. We also dig deep into all of his previous roles while shining some light on what the Marine Corps has planned for the venture within esports. This was an absolute banger episode, and once again, I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 17 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads into 2021. I'm joined today by Ian Millers, who is an avid esports influencer and has been working within the esports scene for about 14 years. How are you going today, mate?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
No worries. I'm really excited to, because your background predominantly is in with the Halo scene. So I'm really excited to learn about Halo and, bring to light some of the past experiences that I've had and some of the things that you've had as well.
Oh, thanks, man. It's a lot of history in Halo, so I'm more than willing and happy to talk about it.
Alrighty. I guess what we'll always do is what we do on Mind Clickers is just a bit of introduction about yourself. I guess your experience within esports and how you got started and where you are now.
All right. Yep. So let's just take it all the way back to
let's do it.
Philly 04. So that was like my first event I attended as a spectator, and then ever since then I was captivated by Halo esports wise. Right. I've been playing the game since 2001. And I really got into competing, I would say around like late Halo 2, early Halo 3 stage. 2008 is when it's my official start date when I really got into like the full-fledged esports scene. So I started then as a competitor, transitioned to a coaching role because of outside activities outside of esports. Mm-hmm. So that kind of took away some time. So it worked best for me just to come in as a coach. And then going from coach, I moved on to like team manager roles. And then when I wasn't working directly with teams, I was doing tournament organization and production of streams. So like back in like 2012, 2013, I was part of the Arena Gaming League production mm-hmm. crew, and helping keep Halo alive from like Halo 4 until Halo 2 anniversary dropped. And that's when I kind of shifted into just a team manager role. So now, in the space, I'm currently serving as like advisor for people that want to build brand awareness in esports and kind of just get involved into esports. Currently, I'm in the United States Marine Corps, mm-hmm. and I work as an advisor for the Marine Corps on esports, working underneath the director of esports and gaming. And now I'm helping shift the DoD into being more active in the space of esports.
Fantastic. Wow. So definitely a lot of experience within Halo itself and obviously those team management roles and the tournament organization. I guess you've really been, in and out of the scene and really got pretty much hands in it the whole 14 years. And that's fantastic to hear. I guess taking it all the way back to when you were a player and a competitor during the time, tell us about that. Because I remember back in the old days, watching on YouTube, the good old MLG tournaments, just it was crazy back in those days. So what were those experiences like as a player?
It was insane. Like it was, I would say that was like the golden age of like Halo esports because, we were front and center. We were like the FPS to be in and be involved with. At the time there was like Counter-Strike Source and Call of Duty was just emerging, but mm-hmm. like Halo was like the esport for console gamers at the time. And being at those tournaments was probably some of the greatest experiences I had on LAN, because mm-hmm. like you could literally find anyone anywhere around the world to join up with or LAN with. And we even the training back in the day, we would have massive LAN parties. I don't know if you know who Legit is, or you know, there's a lot of, you know, APG, those guys. We would have Tampa LANs every year right before MLG Orlando, and it would be huge. Like hundreds of people would come from like Florida, Georgia, South Carolina. Like people would literally travel hours to come and, you know, get some LAN experience with the pros. And I feel like being a competitor at that time really was like the, you know, like that was like the start of what FPS is or currently now.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think Halo was so successful back then? Do you think that, you know, CS was the game for PC gamers and Halo was the game for console gamers?
Yeah. So, you know, at the time console was extremely accessible. You know, everybody, like if you like consoles were, you know, cheaper to get involved with, were less complicated, and like online gaming had just become like a thing at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when people figured they can get, you know, like the FPS for consoles at the time, which was Halo 2. And people like that was just, it was just so fresh and so new. It was like, it was like the category king at the time for console gaming. And, you know, everybody like bought a console to solely play Halo. People could take their consoles to, it was very, you know, one console, one shape, really easy to transport, easy for landing, super simple to get involved with. And then like the game itself, the mechanics were great. The gameplay was phenomenal, and it was just a fun, and it always had like real replay value.
For sure. And I guess, you know, turning to the, you know, the competitive side of Halo and, you know, during those early Halo 3 days, what did that look like in terms of game modes in regards to, you know, what was being played in that competitive sense? Because obviously in Halo, there's quite a few game modes, but you know, obviously in CS, there's one primary game mode that's being played, right? And that's pretty much 5v5 playing the bomb. So what was it that took Halo that competitive state and really, you know, drove and gave that animosity?
Oh, it was because Halo presented a multitude of game types. Right. So like we had Slayer, Capture the Flag, Oddball, we had multiple maps, and then, like, at the time, Halo 2 had these weird glitches that people exploited at high level. You know, when they exploited in high-level gameplay, it made all the difference, and it was just entertaining. So we had, you know, button combos like BXR, BXB. We knew how to exploit mechanics to, you know, do these high-level plays from, like, flag juggling, ball juggling, crouch jumping. It was just thing, and, you know, the map movement – like it was just a very entertaining time for esports. You know, when we look back at like you know, Counter-Strike Source, like it didn't really have those mechanics. It was very pure. It was a straight shooter, and Halo had, it was just a different arena game type, and it was just fresh.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess Halo 3 was that kind of predominantly, you know, back on the Xbox 360. It was the game that I pretty much played, but I never actually engaged with the genre beyond Halo 3. So, you know, beyond Halo 3, what were the big differences, and, you know, how come were the other Halos as competitive as Halo 3 was?
So I would say Halo 3 was extremely popular, and it took what Halo 2 did well, and it didn't change much from it. It just, you know, it slapped a fresh coat of paint on it, and it brought it full force. So like,
yep.
It sold the most out of all the games, so it was just very popular. We had a high game, you know, player base, and it was a huge amount of tournament support behind it. You know, transitioning from Halo 3, we had Halo Reach, which was like it was complete paradigm shift in what Halo franchise normally did. You know, they implemented equipment for movement, armor abilities. The maps weren't as as fresh. Their maps were just straight from the, you know, campaign, so it didn't have that fresh feel to it. And there were some certain, you know, gunplay mechanics that just didn't fit right with the community, like Bloom and just a new weapons like the DMR. There was no battle rifle in Halo Reach, so like it just didn't sit well with a lot of people. You know, a lot of people, you know, aren't comfortable with change, and like that change and the lack of developer support and the stability of the community kind of caused like a gap in the competitive side. So we saw you know, lower numbers than what we were used to. And at that same time, Call of Duty had brought in, you know, they were just refreshing their franchise every 2 years. So like it just kept their game very fresh and very new for the competitors. So from an esports standpoint, like a fresh new game that didn't change much from, you know, its predecessor and brought different gameplay and different gun styles to the to the franchise bode well for like support. So we saw a lot of our competitors leave the Halo scene and go to the Call of Duty scene. Mm. And like our community is notorious for it. We'll breed some of the best FPS talent across all platforms and we'll just they'll bleed out. Like you look at the top Call of Duty players, Formal, Enable, Shotzi, Hook, all Halo players. Like they're all Halo champions.
Yeah.
And then same thing happened like post Halo Reach, moved on to Halo 4. And that's like circa 2012. That's when I really got involved in the production part, you know, and did some casting on the back end too. So we look at like Halo 4 and it took what Halo Reach did and just built upon it. So like what was external, you know, what was like, you know, class style armor abilities. They're like, hey, we're going to go full force with this and let you build out your own, just own class type, similar to Call of Duty, where you can have like certain builds. And, you know, that just didn't feel as natural to like the Halo franchise as what was everyone starts with the same weapon and you pick up weapon off the sandbox type deal.
Yeah.
So that really didn't sit well. Moving on to our next game post Halo 4 was Halo 2 Anniversary.
Yep.
That was a massive opportunity to resurge a franchise, but we were ultimately let down because what happened was there's a third party company, Certain Affinity, love them to death, but like they fumbled the bag here.
Yep.
And they didn't rebuild all of the competitive maps for Halo 2 Anniversary. So we were short a bunch of maps that could have been in rotation for the competitive scene. But what happened was we got stuck with three maps and it got stale real fast.
Dang.
I think it was like Lockout, Sanctuary, and I forgot what the other map was, but it just got really stale and the gameplay was like the gun mechanics were not the same as Halo 2, the original Halo 2. So it just didn't retain the same feel, didn't retain the same style of gunplay. It had more of a Halo 4 feel than a Halo 2 feel.
Right.
And then the maps not being fresh kind of put it in a bad predicament as far as viewership. And, you know, in esports, viewership is important. That's kind of how you build your relevancy. Like, you can have the best game in the world, but if nobody's supporting it, then is it really a good game? You know, and that's where I feel like that's where we lacked a lot. Like, there's a lot of good Halo out there, but, you know, it's just boring to watch.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really get the audience involved. And, you know, the audience is going to be the people that support you through, you know, time, donations, attending tournaments, stuff like that. You know, you can't compel an audience to show why your game is fun. Then, like, you're no better than, you know, just turning the TV off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, finally moving forward to what we currently have is Halo 5 Guardians. Probably the best FPS of like the last console generation. Maybe Titanfall 2 or Apex is up there, but Halo 5 perfected the 4v4 arena. Like it was nothing, something I've never seen done since like Halo CE. In Halo 5 armor abilities for the competitive side, right? They took out ground pound and shoulder charge, so that was phenomenal on them to do that.
Yeah.
So, like, they did a weapons. The game didn't come out as complete as it should have. So, like, they were still like sending updates almost 2 years into the game, and then like the final update in 2017 when they did weapon tuning, put the game in like this amazing state where like you could hit like this flow. So we had the best arena shooter in Halo 5, but the community just didn't like the game in general.
Right.
They didn't like that their armor ability. Nobody really liked the armor abilities. I wasn't against them. I actually enjoyed them. Like I loved like the thrust and the slide and the sprint and the clamber. Mm-hmm. Like that felt natural. Like that feels how like, you know, next gen shooter should feel. But like Halo 5 was probably the most competitive shooter I've ever played, and I've played a multitude of shooters throughout my years.
Yeah.
It like the viewership, like observer mode, perfect. Viewability, amazing. like from a viewer standpoint, audience, absolutely amazing. I think that the biggest issue was there just wasn't enough talent pool. So like, you know, you after a while, it's like watching like the Patriots win the Super Bowl or, you know, Ronaldo score another goal. It's like the same old, same old. So we watch the same two teams dominate the entire scene for like 5 years straight. And it got stale real fast. Everybody's like, oh, I'll be back for the finals when the Sentinels play.
Dang. So, that's really interesting. Yeah,
that's where we're at current day.
Yeah, okay. It's really interesting because, you know, you mentioned, I guess, post Halo 3, a lot of the players went to COD, right? Because I think around that time was, you know, probably Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops 1, Black Ops 2, and those were big games, man.
Those were bangers. Like Modern Warfare 2, like, I think outsold any shooter like it within like the next 5 years. And then Black Ops 1, probably my favorite COD of all time. It was just a fun to play game. Like you had like older style weapons that fired exactly how they do in real life. Then you had you had a fun to play mode, Nazi zombies, which was like done best. Like I think it was implemented in World at War, but Black Ops Nazi zombies was like the best.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because do you think that because COD came in and made such a dominant move within the scene, there was really no going back to Halo for some of those previous COD players?
And they had developer support across the board. When it came down to like throwing money down for tournaments, Activision just went in their pocket and was like, here's $1 million tournament. What do you need? And we didn't have that same developer support from, 343 or Bungie. Bungie didn't give a crap about esports. And then 343 had a lot of a corporate pushback from Microsoft in the beginning until Microsoft understood like esports is, even though it's 1% of gaming, it's a huge percent of like why people buy games.
Mm-hmm, for sure, definitely. And while you're speaking about, I guess, you know, back in the old days and the tournament kind of setting, something really kind of reminisced within myself because, you know, back in those days I was, you know, pretty active on, you know, different tournaments, especially with the MW2 scene, on Cybergamer. And, you know, back then you pretty much had to, you know, create your own team and there wasn't really an organization above you that really supported you. And, you know, nowadays you have physiotherapists on a team, you have so many different external allied health assistants to really, you know, provide that support. But back then, you know, it wasn't like that. It was just you five guys, just you make the team and you go play. So how was that experience back then when it was just, you know, I'm going to get these guys with me and we're going to go play and, you know, we don't really have that external support?
Yeah. Let's take it back even a step further. Like, look at like the tournament itself. So the entire like esports scene, especially North America, was very just like riddled. It was like the Wild West back then. Mm. It was riddled with like just unhealthy sponsors, bad habits, you know, it was a toxic lifestyle around gaming at the time. Yep. So I remember back when like Doritos was sponsoring tournaments, Hot Pockets, Monster Energy, Red Bull,
Mountain Dew,
like it was just everywhere, just a bunch of junk. And, you know, as, you know, young impressionable gamers at the time, we thought like that, like, you know, we all want to be like T-Squared just got, he got like a multi-million dollar Dr. Pepper deal at the time where he was on every bottle of Dr. Pepper and he's probably still spending Dr. Pepper money. That's like the joke, like T-Squared is still spending Dr. Pepper money. And so like every, you know, back in the day, we all thought that we needed to drink this stuff and eat this stuff to be like, you know, to be at the level of this guy.
Yeah.
When realistically, like T-Squared's drinking, you know, water, he's sleeping healthy, he's training his body, he's training his mind. And while we're over here riddling our body with like sugars and fats and, you know, just unhealthy gaming habits, T-Squared plays like maybe 4 hours a day, but he plays like with focus and purpose. And he evaluates his gameplay while we're over here just grinding 8 to 12 hours a day, thinking that's going to make us better at the game.
Yeah.
It was just like this, like we bought into like that false gamer lifestyle and that false pro gamer, like those habits when that wasn't the case at all.
Was that very prevalent within, I guess, the North American scene?
Just horrible. The landscape is changing right now, but God, is an uphill battle. Like we're still like dealing with like the bad sponsors, like even some of the pro teams that are sponsored by like Red Bull and Monster, they have the cans, but they're not drinking the product. they're dumping that stuff out and filling it up with water. Like even G Fuel, like people aren't even drinking G Fuel. The one guys that are sponsored, but they're selling off tubs of it because they need that sponsorship money.
Mm. And how much of a negative stigma do you think that has upon the industry when you have, I guess, marketing, you know, they're specifically targeting individuals like the guy you just said, and they're not even consuming the drink, or they're not even doing what they're doing, and then you're having gamers like, other gamers, buying into that.
Yeah, it's just it's the nature of the beast, because like back in the day when we weren't relevant, like all of our money came from those marketing deals. We couldn't host these hundreds of thousands of dollar tournaments have like this huge scene without that money from these marketing, those marketing dollars from these companies, these sponsorship deals. And same thing, and it goes for a lot of these like high level pro teams. Like they need that money so they can pay the players so they could be the top tier esport team and bring in more revenue from tournament winnings and eventually gain more sponsorships. Yeah. So like as professionals in the industry, we understand like this isn't the stuff we need, but it's the stuff we have to sell. And we want to like eventually shift that to being able to focus on a more holistic and healthy product from like healthy, medical services when it comes to esports, healthy like health products, healthy lifestyle in general. But like right now, we're just in that predicament where we need to, promote this lifestyle and these products to get the money that we need to survive in esports.
Yeah.
It's at a critical stage because you see a lot of like the bigger influencers are not siding with companies that don't support like what they support.
Mm.
But like at the same time, it's like when you're working with an organization or a corporation, like you have to just align with what the corporation aligns with.
Yeah. And I think if you don't align with those corporation goals, it's like, well, this is my opportunity to make it, right? This is my opportunity to push into the scene. This is my opportunity to, get exposure within the scene and market myself. So, in that regards, do you think there's such a pressure to take these deals and take these, marketing and sponsorship deals, which don't directly align with my goals?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to like where you personally are in your career. Like a guy like Ninja, like he doesn't need the money from Red Bull, but like he's going to take the money from Red Bull because he's at the point in his career where he doesn't need a Red Bull deal, but Red Bull puts him in position to negotiate with other big partners in the industry. So of course, he's going to align himself with Red Bull. Like, they support athletes. He doesn't have to drink a product. He has a Red Bull fridge that sits on his desk that hasn't been touched. with us non-millionaire esports guys, like, it's definitely a lot of pressure for us to take these deals, even though we don't align with them, because that's probably going to be like the deal that pays all our bills.
Yeah.
No one in their right mind is going to turn that down. Because like they understand that like they don't have to use a product, but they have to support the product and they have to push the product to others.
For sure. So what needs to change in that situation, do you think? Do you think it's more so a more development in terms of positive sponsors and people who are reinforcing a positive way of performing? Or what needs to change?
So like right now there's like there's a paradigm shift where we see a lot of like, individuals focusing on more of a healthier lifestyle, healthier brand. Like you can even look at the Halo 4 global champion Ace. He only like supports like healthy lifestyle brand and healthy products, and that's his personal brand. Whatever team he lands on, he doesn't like, he's gonna sponsor support that team sponsor, but like as him the individual, as his personal brand, he's going to support what he believes in. And so that's where you're going to see a lot of the lines being drawn from like what they support as a team versus what they support as a individual. And, especially being content creators, being a content creator, not just a competitor, it gives you a lot more leeway to focus on your personal brand and show people what you really believe in. So you can have two different, lines of accounting when it comes to like brand management and brand awareness.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I guess, you know, even nowadays, the esports performance scene is just becoming so much more developed, you know, especially when you have other regions such as the European region who are taking more of a direct approach in terms of player performance. And even here in OCE, you know, just more external individuals getting on board organizations and providing that support for players, which at the end of the day, some of it really need.
Yeah. And I feel like the EU and OCE like have like a bigger advantage at capturing like different, you know, different style of brands and coming in with a different focus than what like the North American brands have. Right. Cause North America is a bunch of sellouts when it comes to like corporations. Like these guys, you know, there's going to be guys with marketing budgets, right, who could just throw money at esports. And a lot of people will just throw money at esports with like, in like, hey, here, like we're gonna find the top guys, the top teams, and inside of the top esports, and just throw a bunch of money at them, and you'll see that. But like, we're like, you know, where like those, like where all that money is in North America, is it might not be the same in like the Oceania region or like the EU, and those regions have a huge opportunity to capture like these like better brands for like therapeutics. Orthopedics, but posture brands,
like ergonomics and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, ergonomics, there it goes. Yeah, so like, brands that, you know, align with like gamer ergonomics, and you know, and games that align with like physical and mental health, like companies that have that kind of alignment with the esports industry, or had a potential to even connect with the esports industry, especially like these bigger, like top tier corporations, like Herman Miller, you know, when they can start aligning with like what we are doing in the gaming industry, I feel like that's a bigger opportunity for like our buddies like internationally to take advantage of that and bring them into esports, and it kind of force everybody to see like it can be done. Like there has to be a proof of concept showing that like organizations can be sponsored off of brands that are, you know, health aware and health conscious.
For sure. It's definitely an interesting scenario where there's just so much corporate impact. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you look back 5 years and it didn't really used to be as present as it was back then. Nowadays, you have, you know, more so influencers, you know, they have the upstart of Twitch and so much more different angles that can be approached by esports. And it's definitely interesting to see where it's going to go within the next 5 years as well.
Exactly. And like we see it right now, like I think because of like these companies are owned by bigger, you know, proprietary corporations. It'll probably be easier to, you know, get them involved. So like let's look at Monster Energy, right?
Yeah.
Monster Energy is owned by the Coca-Cola Corporation. Coca-Cola also owns Dasani Water and Powerade. Why haven't we had like Powerade in esports yet? Like, you know, like that, that's a better angle to take than like, let's focus on Monster Energy. I'm pretty sure you could sell more Powerade because it's cheaper and it's better for you. And it has known benefits, for providing, you know, rehydration, electrolyte, and helps you focus.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we focus on like the performance element in esports, I feel like if we take a healthier approach to performance in esports, that's a better way to, you know, to target the audience than to look at like, you know, this like when we drink Monster, we know it's not good for us. We drink it because we need that instant energy. Yep. Well, let's focus on like longevity in esports. Like, do you want to be doing this for a long run? Like, there's no age limit to esports. I've seen 40-year-old competitors beat like, you know, like these top tier competitors. So like they're, you know, when we focus on like that longevity in esports and a healthier lifestyle overall, I feel like that's a better approach to take than like this, you know, drink Monster, you get this instant energy, instant win. Like that's not the angle we should be looking at.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with you. I think longevity is one of the biggest things that impacts an esports player's career, because, you know, especially for some of these players who are trying to take the quick fixes, like, you know, as you mentioned, having a Monster, they're not doing exercises, their sleep schedule's poor, and they're not even doing hand stretches before a game. So even that itself can, you know, have the opportunity for, you know, ongoing joint problems and carpal tunnel. And there's so many different routes and domains that can impact an esports player's career. And I mean, that's why, you know, we see some players in the Asian leagues retiring at 25.
Yeah.
we see so many people starting to retire early when in the, it should be the opposite, where nowadays we have so much avenues, we have so many different angles that we can take for esports performance, and they should really be starting to incorporate it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's crazy to me to see like these top tier professionals, especially like League of Legends players, and yeah. they're like, my body can't take it anymore. Like, where are your coaches at? Like, what's going on in your organization? Like, your coaches should be the main reason why you feel refreshed after every match. Why you should, and that's the thing too. It's like at a coach when I was a coach, we didn't just coach in Halo. We coached in like performance. Mm-hmm. I focused on overall performance. So like we did, you know, we did nutrition plans, we did exercises, and we did stretches and breathing exercises before matches. Mm. And like that alone helped them be focused mentally and physically. So like people don't understand, like it's a holistic concept. Like when you, like you're not just using your body, you're using your mind, your body, and your like your spirit. Like you're communicating with each other, you're keeping the esprit de corps high within the team, and like you're using hand-eye coordination, like advanced tactics, communication, and overall just competitiveness to win games. And people don't understand that. Like, it's a lot involved into just running a team. And then people that run multiple teams, like, they have their hands full.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree. Definitely I can relate to some of those things, especially as a part of the Renegades. Definitely some of those factors I incorporate as a performance coach. And it's crucial to have a holistic vision and an outlook and everything, you know, to account towards, player nutrition, hand stretches, sleep, you know, all those kind of holistic pillars of performance, right? But then also making sure that internally the players are, you know, have that underlying motivation to compete at the elite level, whether that be self-confidence, mental toughness, motivation, you know, within that kind of scene. It's definitely crucial, and it's definitely interesting to see, whether the differences lay, because definitely over here in OCE, us as a region, the biggest impacts that we have is that we don't have enough resources. So, you know, probably the direct opposite of somewhere like North America, where they have tons of resources that can be invested within the scene. But definitely over here in OCE, the resources aren't as abundant. And because they're not as abundant, player performance isn't really being directly targeted. It's more so, you know, just try and get players on a team and try and incorporate into that vision. So it's definitely going to be, you know, interesting to see where it does go in the next 5 years for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. It's like, because like our regions are so disconnected from each other, we're not approaching esports the same. It's like, North America took like this, we kind of just like threw ourselves all in at it and then kind of figured it out as we go. While like other regions, like they're looking at what North America is doing. It's like, hey, we're going to take this and that and apply it to our region.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's sometimes they miss out on like the intricacies, like the what you're doing right now is performance coaching. That is probably one of the more important parts of like esports in general, because a lot of these coaches, they only coach in the game. They don't coach outside the game. Like, you have to coach in the physical space as well as in the digital space. And if you only coach in one, you're missing a completely other side of like the esport.
Yeah,
like there's electronics and there's sports. It's like they both have to work together in synergy. And if you don't focus on both, then like you're missing out on the whole picture.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it very much goes towards the same as traditional sports, right? You have athletes who are pushing to the skill boundaries of what they're capable of doing, similar to in-game mechanics in esports. But, you know, it gets to a point where everyone really does get to, you know, the same mechanical level. And what's going to separate yourself from everyone else is your approach to external performance, your approach to, you know, sleep, exercise, all those kind of things is what's going to separate you and give you that couple extra percent edge. And sometimes that's all you need, that extra couple of percent.
Exactly. And like, I'm seeing that like in my esport in particular, it's happening at the professional level. So we don't see like the up and coming trying to, you know, approach it holistically. We see them just kind of approaching it like a bull in a china shop, just rush in, you know, focus on the game, destroy everybody, and, you know, hopefully we can make it into the pro league. Well, I'm like, well, you have to approach this holistically or you're gonna burn out. And I've seen it happen a million times over and over again. People that don't take a holistic approach to the game are going to burn out, and they're not going to have a good time. They're probably going to destroy relationships along the way. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to be successful for the long term.
Sure.
And a lot of like the current current professionals have all like have some sort of holistic approach to being successful in the esport, and mm-hmm. that has made a world of difference from their quality of life personally, and then the quality of life of others around them when, you know, supporting them and helping them get to the level they need to be at.
For sure, 100%, definitely agree. So yeah, you mentioned earlier that you were in that as a player, then you transitioned to a coach. So, you know, back in the day, was there many coaches similar to like yourself who had that holistic outlet, or was it more so just all game coaches?
Most of them were just all game coaches. So like, yeah. You know, like I feel like I was a real trailblazer when it came to like doing that in the Halo space, because I was an athlete before I transitioned to esports. So like I mm-hmm. knew like there was a level of mental toughness and like just in grit, determination, teamwork, and just esprit de corps, just keeping the team in good spirits, right? I knew that all that mattered. It all meant something. It was tangible to a certain degree. And taking that belief and taking those experiences and applying those to the Halo esports, like I felt like that made a huge difference in especially these games where my team was either, you know, outmatched and, you know, mm-hmm. or just in, you know, really in those really close matches, keeping that team focused and just keeping them engaged physically, mentally, emotionally, and like tactically into like the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, historically speaking, like a lot of Halo players, like a lot of coaches, they keep times and, you know, of like weapon spawns, you know, they help with call outs and stuff. They argue on behalf of the players to, you know, tournament TOs and, mm-hmm. and refs and stuff like that. But they never really focus on the performance side.
Yeah.
There's some that focus on like, you know, watching film after the games and after scrimmages and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you know, that's expected of a coach. Nobody really focused on like the performance evaluation and like in-game performances of the players. Mm.
The player actually playing the game. Definitely. And then you mentioned briefly you went into that kind of tournament organization role and, you know, you got involved within that space. So what did that look like and how is that kind of approached?
So I spent like a short time as a TO and it definitely wasn't a pleasurable experience. Cause like it was a lot of paperwork and a lot of arguing.
Really?
Yeah. Players love to argue like about seedings that they don't rate or that they leave that they rate and they don't have to like the substantiated records, you know, for those seedings. There's a lot of disputes with matches, at a lower level, you know, when you get to like main bracket play, like all that kind of goes away. But, you know, like getting people into the bracket play like that was, especially when back in the day when Halo 3 had like 256 teams, like,
dang.
So, yeah, we're talking about like everyone arguing about everything, paperwork getting messed up, scores getting, you know, reported incorrectly, you know, stats getting uploaded before like they were certified, stuff like that. And it was a very frustrating experience. But it was a growing experience, a learning experience. So I took everything I learned from that and kind of helped me transition to being like a team manager.
Mm. Fantastic. Yeah, because even just thinking about tournament organization, I'm just thinking like what if a team doesn't rock up and that kind of completely offsets the schedule or, you know, what? Yeah, it's definitely a lot that goes into it that you actually just raised it. I actually didn't think about, for sure.
Yeah, and then like just knowing the rule books, oh god, like I was like, hey, like this isn't a rule, this isn't black and white, your team didn't comply so you're disqualified, and they want to argue with me and they try to fight. It was bad. It was a lot of headaches, but people learn to respect you when you stand your ground, especially mm-hmm. in that space, and I feel like those guys are probably the most underappreciated people at lands, because like they do all the groundwork to make sure lands run smoothly.
Yeah.
And you know, players play and compete, but like those TOs make sure like things like lands don't get held up, you know, run late and people get to where they need to go and like the broadcast happens as smooth as possible.
Yeah. So was there satisfaction in getting through a successful one?
More like relief.
Relief.
Yeah, like you make it to Championship Sunday and it's like, whew, like made it finally. The Fridays, sometimes Thursdays are usually like the hectic days because like a lot of teams a lot of paperwork. Now it's pretty simple. Everything's done on like the tournament like websites and stuff. So it's extremely simple. But like back when like we were just like kind of marking stuff on paper, had big whiteboards and stuff, like that was a headache.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess the next kind of step, you know, you mentioned briefly you entered that team manager role. So was that with an organization or what did that look like?
Yeah, there was a couple startup orgs. I don't think they're around anymore. I think the most recent one I worked with was like 2016, 2017, Virtual Storm. And they did some pretty good stuff in the Halo scene. They had a couple teams make top 8, top 16. And it was good because like it helped expand what I understood from Halo into other esports. So like I got to work with Tekken and Smash, some League of Legends. And a little bit of, I think we did Overwatch. We might have done Overwatch, but it helped me like kind of expand my horizon on like working with brands, working with partners, understanding how different teams operate across multiple esports, and just really taking all of that and then using the experience that I already had and kind of help leveraging my experiences and being in a new esport to build more legitimacy, you know, advocate for players, and just kind of fight for our fair share when it came to like just being seated properly in tournaments, being able to compete and making sure that these teams actually did their jobs and, you know, showed up to tournaments, got their buying tickets across different, you know, time zones was kind of weird at times, but like kind of I had to figure it out.
Yeah, for sure. So you're still in that kind of team manager role? Have you passed that now?
I'm past that. So like right now I'm working as an advisor with a startup company. We're about to launch in August. I can't talk too much about it, but it's going to be pretty exciting stuff. Looking to change the landscape of what we do in esports as far as performance. I'm working with the United States Marine Corps building out their esports program. So I'm currently an active duty Marine, and I'm working with our director of esports and gaming to build out our program because we're starting everything from scratch, and we're trying to build this to be the most cost-effective, efficient, and just like lethal esports team that the DoD has to offer. Currently, there are four other esports teams that are competing across the services. So they have U.S. Army Esports, U.S. Navy Esports, Air Force Gaming, and then Coast Guard Esports. So we're trying to be the best, and we're bringing like the most elite players that we have across the service to compete in different games.
Wow, that's fascinating. I never knew that existed. Wow, that's awesome. So how did that all start? Who kind of said, okay, let's start to think about esports and let's start to incorporate in something we should do?
So I actually stumbled across the director of esports and gaming for the Marine Corps because he followed me on Twitter, and he's a huge Halo fan and just really wanted to, you know, get a pulse on the Halo community. So we kind of linked up from there, and he was telling me about his initiative to build out esports for the entire service. And I started working with him and advising him on, you know, what we should do and, you know, who to work with and stuff to that nature. And now we're kind of working together in an unofficial capacity to build out what the future of esports for the DoD was going to be.
Wow, for sure. And I guess, you know, all your background experience as a player, as a coach, as a TO, as a manager, that all directly aligns into, I guess, what they're trying to build out, right?
Exactly. So like, I had this unique, you know, path through esports, and it kind of just, you know, organically landed me where at what I'm doing now, and it's exciting, challenging for sure, but the future is bright for that, and I'm really excited to just like launch a program and, you know, send the best that we have at it.
For sure. So does that look like, I guess, you know, you mentioned like you get the Marine, the U.S. Navy. So is that more so a tournament just specifically for those guys and they essentially just verse each other?
So not necessarily. Eventually that, you know, on certain occasions when we're, you know, for like recruiting purposes, we'll do that. Or, you know, for certain occasions when like the academies have like sports games against each other. We have esports exhibitions, and we'll kind of field those teams out there. What we see the future of this is having full-fledged teams to compete at the professional level the top esports. Currently, the armies and the Air Force are like the top two that are really spearheading that part of it. We're looking to get involved also. More likely starting with Halo Infinite. Right now, we're building a Valorant team. We're building that from scratch. So that's, you know, finding the best players across a service of 180,000 is pretty tough. Because first, it requires awareness. And then second, it requires vetting. Third, we need to actually put these guys to the burner and see if they're worth their medal.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, how do you screen those players to see whether they're going to meet the cut on being on the team or not?
Ideally, we want to look at their performance across the game already, since Valorant has a rank system. I really don't like to judge players off of rank, because, you know, player dynamics are unique. But like in a game this new, rank actually is going to matter. So we're going to look at the ranks and the rank playlist, and then see if they mesh well together. If the five players don't mesh well, then hopefully we can find another player that will work with them. But eventually, you know, give it some time. The Marine Corps always makes mission.
Yeah, sure. That makes me really excited to think about that, because, you know, I think the biggest problem within esports now is, I guess, you know, as we pretty much talked about for a good quite bit, is that external performance, you know, looking at your sleep, looking at your nutrition, hydration. But I feel like the Marine Corps has that completely all ticked off, right?
Exactly.
So yeah.
And the thing is, like, I was on an all-Marine wrestling team prior. So, wow. Like, I competed in wrestling for the Marine Corps, and we were provided with, like, the best nutritionists, athletic trainers. I wouldn't call them mental health, but I would say more like brain health. So cognitive performance trainers.
Yep.
And, you know, we had those already at our hand and, you know, at our fingertips. And now we're going to apply we're going to take these same resources and give them to esports athletes. And then, you know, send them and have them at their best, and, you know, have them physically at their best and, you know, mentally ready, so they can compete at a high level against professional esports athletes. And not only will like they be on a team, these Marines are already going to be getting paid full time. Their travel is going to be taken care of. Their meals and lodging will always be taken care of. So you're getting the same services that tier one organizations are getting, but you're getting it through the Department of Defense.
Yeah, that's fantastic. This is completely new to me. And how long has this been in production or you know, being thought about?
So right now, for the Marine Corps, it's in its infancy. I believe the Air Force is in their like second year. The Army is in their second or third year with it. And I think COVID kind of threw a wrench in everybody's plans as far as what we wanted to do in esports. But we're looking at having a big showcase here post-COVID. And we want to be able to show that, like, not only can you serve your country in a professional manner, but you can also have fun while doing it. And the esports is going to be like that fun factor. So, like, you know, these Marines, they get deployed all the time, like whether it's on you know shipborne deployments where they're stuck at sea for 6 to 9 months, or in a hostile foreign environment for 6 to 12 months. We want to give back to those Marines that put their life on the line, and be able to provide them with opportunities to serve in a different capacity.
Yeah.
So like esports is one of those those unique jobs that you can do in a service, and it won't be like a full time job. It'll be more like, hey, you can be a part of this for X amount of time, and then. Yeah. You know, once you serve that, you have to return back to the Fleet Marine Force to do your job. You know, ideally, that's where we wanted that. You know, we can't really afford to advertise the Marine Corps as an organization that fully sponsors esports.
Yeah.
But we want to be able to provide the opportunity for Marines to do unique things outside of the scope of their normal jobs.
For sure. That's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic. And I guess in that downtime you talked about, when, you know, they're out at sea, or whether they're internationally, you know, is that when they can get opportunities to practice, or how does that kind of practice environment start to formulate?
When they're deployed, there's probably not going to be much time to practice because usually these guys are doing missions, running through combat scenarios, doing some type of training exercise. I uniquely remember my last deployment. I was in a desert in the middle of like nowhere in the Middle East, and I had a games case, and you know that was like kind of my when my shift was over, I opened my games case, I'll pop in Halo or Overwatch, and then I'll just play for a few hours, just kind of de-stress and relax. And that was like my end of day, like kind of like gaming session. Yeah, I really didn't focus on esports. It was more like, hey, like this is my way to connect to like some of the things back at home that I normally wouldn't have.
Wow. Fantastic. That's amazing to hear. And I can definitely see the passion, you know, as you speak about it, you know, what this could become and definitely, you know, what it's been building upon. So I think that's absolutely fantastic, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Like I'm looking forward to hopefully fielding a team sometime this fall, and preferably I will hope that like we can focus on Halo because it's going to be a new launch.
Let's go.
But we'll see what the landscape is kind of speaking to. Because Knockout City just got released. We don't know if that's going to be like the next Fortnite or not. You know, I don't believe so, but like if that's what the people want, then you know that's what we showcase to them. Ideally we want to be where the audience is.
I think that's crucial. And do other tier 1 esports organizations like, you know, your 100 Thieves, your Faves, TSM, Cloud9, do they all know about what the Army and what the US Defense Force is building? Do they know about this kind of system?
Because like from like a high level, we work with these tier 1 organizations, sometimes around like you know, veteran related you know, holidays like Veterans Day, Memorial Day, stuff like that, to kind of build awareness of like, you know, some of the troops that put their lives on the line and the ones that have already made that ultimate sacrifice. And there's some veterans that work in these tier 1 organizations that kind of, you know, they work as like liaison between the Department of Defense and like their organization. But like we've worked with like, you know, tier 1 esports teams, top, you know, like high level streamers. Like we recently just released a video, I think yesterday or today, where we brought in four of the top streamers across multiple esports and had them like do all of our combat training with the Marines, and we showed them how to, you know, breach walls, clear houses, and do like real combat related exercises. And like as a Marine Corps, we personally don't want to like take away like that, like the real mission that we actually do every day away from, you know, because we want to involve ourselves in esports, but we don't want to take away the reality of what we do and the danger of like what involves becoming a Marine and being a Marine is about. And that's why we're kind of approaching it differently than what the rest of the DoD is.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess you just talked about that. I was just thinking, you know, something like Rainbow Six Siege, where you is that kind of combat scenario. You are breaching walls. You are strategically planning. Would that be something that they'd be looking at?
We're kind of taking when integrating ourselves into esports. Right now, we're focusing on influencer marketing relations. So that's just working with high level influencers, showing them what it's like to be a Marine. And then having them speak with their community about their experiences with the Marines, from like our professionalism, our tactical lifestyle, and just the technicalities that come with being a Marine. So like that's been a big part of what we're trying to do. We're kind of working on like an evangelistic approach versus like, hey, like we're the Marine Corps and we do esports. Like that's not what we do. We're Marine Corps and we win America's battles. But here's how that kind of ties into esports.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And I guess just before we start to wrap up soon, you know, obviously Halo being in that kind of militaristic kind of environment, that kind of, you know, Halo, what Halo is originally. Does that connect with you personally?
Oh, yeah. it was actually probably one of the influential reasons I, like, chose this branch over, like, any other branch of the military.
Gotcha.
Like Halo's relationship with, like, Marines, like, Master Chief's always with the Marines. The Marines in Halo were, like, the coolest people in the world, like, from their dialogue to their appearance to, like, their tenacity and their grit in-game. And, you know, even reading the extended media, like, the lore and stuff, mm-hmm. like, these guys were some of the toughest mofos that the UNSC had. So, like,
yeah.
That was really cool. And my favorite character of all time in the Halo series is Sergeant Major Avery Johnson Jr.
Yeah.
He was like the coolest guy ever. And like being little old me growing up, seeing that guy, like I wanted to be like that. I wanted to be like Sergeant Johnson. Like he was just a badass.
Yeah.
And like that kind of really, that resonated with me. And, you know, when I actually, you know, got to meet other Marines before I joined, like they kind of already like, what Halo already had in their game, they took from the actual U.S. Marines. So, like, it all resonated with me because, like, everything went full circle.
Yeah, for sure.
So, like, that was, like, a big influential part of me joining.
Yeah, for sure. That's fantastic. I really appreciate you sharing that. I think that's fantastic, that kind of connection you made with the game and then with obviously the Defense Force as well. And one thing that I noticed recently was this whole idea of Halo Infinite. And, you know, where do you think that's going to go? Do you think that's going to, you know, make a big return for Halo and be going to be, you know, impactful for the series and the brand?
So I believe so because, like, it's going to be a 10-year platform. Right. Halo Infinite is set to be the biggest investment in esports that 343 has ever done.
Wow.
They're working exclusively with Adam AP, who started MLG back in the day and has now started his own esports company called Esports Engine, where they pretty much took all the core people from MLG, took all of their values, and they created their own company out of it because MLG was bought off by Activision some years ago, and they can't touch it anymore. So now he's like taking everything that he has learned throughout his years in the industry and bringing it full swing back to Halo. And Adam has a soft spot in his heart for Halo, and he's very passionate about it because without mm-hmm. Halo, there wouldn't be there wouldn't be an MLG, there wouldn't be an Adam AP. Like he wouldn't be here without Halo. So he's already compelled to make this like the top tier esport again. And with the investment from 343 Industries and Microsoft and our outside sponsors that are coming into the industry. I'm not going to speak on this potential sponsor that 343 has, but there's a big sponsor that's coming with them along with their parent company, Microsoft. And I feel like it's going to be a fantastic decade for Halo.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be really interesting to see whether or not, I guess, they can really be competitive at the top of the food chain with, you know, the other big boys, CSGO, Valorant, you know, League of Legends, where they can really make a big impact within the scene and start to definitely, you know, shine through again.
Yeah, I believe that, like, because Halo is now going to be free to play and on PC from day one, like, the multiplayer alone is going to be an insane ecosystem to be a part of. The free to play aspect allows people to, at no risk, experience the Halo Infinite multiplayer. With the support from the developers and the increased size in the sandbox and weapon options, that gives like an unlimited potential for what it can be competitively.
Mm.
And then in the hands of Adam, I believe like he's going to be like the shepherd of Halo esports and just guide him to the right path.
Fantastic. And I think I briefly saw you tweet or something, or I saw something somewhere about a battle royale and a BR. So do you think that's going to be coming to Halo Infinite? Is that confirmed or is that just speculation?
It's a lot of speculation, but like, you know, if we base it off of current industry trends, a lot of free-to-play multiplayer games are coming with Battle Royale. Mm-hmm. Halo Infinite has a large sandbox that's scalable for Battle Royale. Mm-hmm. They already have the mechanics and components that a Battle Royale requires and needs to be successful.
Yep.
And they have multiple developers working across the industry that have mm-hmm. already built battle royales. I believe that if Halo Infinite implements a battle royale, it would be a game changer for the entire franchise.
Yep.
Because all the battle royale streamers, the top tier players of battle royale, they have all been prior Halo players and would love to have a Halo Infinite battle royale. And that would not only the increase in visibility, the free to play playability of the game is going to change the way this game launches. And I feel like because it's a platform, there's a long term sustainability of it.
Right. For sure, definitely. Fantastic. It's definitely going to be exciting to see for sure. And do you know when that's going to be released, or that they haven't really done a release date yet?
E3 is coming up here in the next few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go with November 15th, the 20-year anniversary of Halo. Right. But, you know, let me look at my calendar real quick. We noticed that every Halo either launches on a Thursday or a Tuesday.
So really?
If we go to Halo for November, and we go to, I see a 9th and 11th. So maybe the night of the 15th. Maybe, you know, the 15th, the night of, because it's a Monday.
Gotcha.
So we might get like a close to midnight launch. You guys in Oceania probably going to be the first people to touch it. Maybe Guam, who knows?
Yeah.
So we'll see. And you could preload it on your PC and Xbox. So.
Okay. Awesome. Definitely. I guess just as we wrap up, you know, we have a lot on MindClickers. We've got a lot of youth who are listening who really want to, I guess, take, you know, their approach to esports to the next level. You know, we've got a lot of, I guess, amateurs, semi-pros, even professionals listening in, who are really just trying to listen and extract different bits and pieces that they can add on their game. So if you had some advice for any of those listening who are really looking to really push into the esports professional scene, you know, what would you tell them, and how would you tell them to approach it?
Take care of your mind and take care of your body. A lot of gamers get caught up in like the game. I promise you, the game's going to change no matter what game it is. So you're not going to play the same game for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But you will have the same body and you will have the same mind. And those two things need to be taken care of. From your brain health, how you perform, how you feed your brain, and how you think about the game needs to always be worked on. And then your body physically, staying in shape. You don't have to be the most fit person, but get outside and exercise. Do something. Walk. Go on a walk. Go on a run. Go to the gym. Eat healthier foods. Like, you can make conscious, healthy decisions that will affect your body for the long term. Because if you want to be in esports and you want to be here long term, you have to think long term. You have to put down the Red Bull, put down the Monster, put down the G Fuel. Drink water. Focus on meditation exercises, stuff like that, and focus on performance. Ergonomics are important. Don't go buy the racing chair. Go get you a legitimate office chair. Go get you something that puts your posture at the right thing. Especially if you're playing keyboard and mouse, really focus on your posture, because bad posture will put you in carpal tunnel and you'll be done. That'd be a very short career. Don't spend all your time gaming. You know, take dedicated time for reviewing your gameplay. Record your gameplay, review it, have someone else review it, like a fresh set of eyes. And then, you know, don't be afraid of constructive criticism. All right. If somebody tells you you suck, ask them why. And you know, don't sign any contracts without looking at it, without having someone else read it over. I've seen a lot of players get put in bad contracts, especially day of tournament.
Fantastic.
Oh, God.
Really, really spoken like someone's really passionate about the scene, and it definitely shows. And I mean, you know, you really pretty much are an esports veteran, and it's really fantastic for you to share some of those insights that I'm sure a lot of players up and coming or already, you know, up in the scene can definitely take into consideration. And I really appreciate that, Ian, for sure.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. And for players out there doubting yourself, question yourself, look, you don't have to be a player to be in esports. I remember, you don't have to be like a competitor. Esports is an industry. With industry, mm-hmm. there are other jobs in esports you can do. Find what you're good at and be good at it. All right. Be the best. You know, sell yourself. Put yourselves in that put yourselves in that uncomfortable situation where you have to learn and you have to get better and you have to step your game up.
If that's not motivation, I don't know what is, man. Awesome. For everyone listening, where can we find you on your socials, or where can we get in contact with you, find out more about you?
All right. So you can find me on LinkedIn at Ian Mills. You can find me on Twitter at esportsian. And you can find me on Discord at esportsian6109.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Ian, for coming on. And yeah, I think it was a fantastic chat. Really, I guess, coming into it with that kind of Halo mindset and then exploring some other dippy topics in regards to the marketing and performance side of stuff, which I think is conversations that should be had consistently, and then really shining some light on, what everything that the Defense Force is doing. And that was fantastic to really hear about and to explore that as well. So I really appreciate coming on and spending some time for a chat. And yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Catch you later.
You too.